Okay, this is the last Sunday in the month for speaker month of this group, and I'm going to ask my friend Scott to introduce the speaker, if you would, please.
I'm Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. We have a speaker today, and there's people that you'll meet in this program. I've only known this speaker for about a month and a half, but when you meet certain people in here, they will change your life and allow you to see perspectives and things that, for me, just were amazing. And part of the things of this program I've also learned is to pass that on. And I couldn't just keep them to myself. So with that, I'd like to introduce Willie B.
Yay! Thanks, Scott. You know, I'm a real Scott. My name's Willie Burns, and I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic.
Willie.
And I've always considered it to be a privilege and a pleasure to be asked to do anything in AA. And I'm not unfamiliar with this area, but it's a while since I've been down here. It's the first time I've been at this meeting, and I thank you for the welcome that I've had. I'd like to thank Shane for reading out how it works. It's a piece of literature that helped to save my life. And the young man beside me, I was speaking to him just before the meeting started, and he was telling me he's been around the AA for about 10 years, and I'm glad you're here. I would like to welcome anybody that's new, or anybody that's coming back, or anyone that's struggling. And this talk is for you. Let me be your guinea pig. I find it very reassuring to know that I'm the only person in this meeting that doesn't have an accent. I've got no intention of going through a long drunkalogue. You'd be here till midnight if I did that. You know, I'm just trying to cover as much ground as I possibly can. I was born into an alcoholic home. Both my parents were alcoholic, my mother especially. And somehow it's more socially acceptable to see a wee drunk man staggering down the street. After a while, nobody bothers. Oh, there's that wee man drunk tonight again. But see, when it's a drunk woman, that's sore. And see, when that drunk woman is your mother, trust me. I was the only boy, and I was in a family of six girls, six sisters. And I love to tell people that I was three times as unfortunate in life as Cinderella. She only had two ugly sisters. But because of the constant drinking at home, you know, and I won't go into the detail, I'm sure you can all imagine it for yourself. I couldn't wait to get away from home, my parents' home, as soon as I could. I remember in my early teens, I made myself a promise that I would never drink. And I meant it. Because I remember thinking, if that's what booze does to people, it's not for me. I left high school at 18, and I left there just before the exams, and I did that to spite my father. That's why I did it. I got married within 6 months. I was 19 when I got married. My wife was only 16. We're both brought up Catholic in the west of Scotland. And we had three children within 2 years and 10 months. And my married life was finished after that. I didn't start drinking until I was about 21 or 22. And I remember at that time, I worked in the gambling industry since I was 15 years old. Even when I was at school, I worked in the gambling industry. We moved down to London, and I got a very well-paid job. All the different companies, the bookmakers that I worked for, you know, they thought the world of this wee guy. And I robbed them blind. You know, I stole and embezzled all sorts of money. But it never did me any good, because I'd get into the bars and I was the last of the big spenders. I'd go out for an evening and hire my company, you know. I was very generous with other people's money, I can assure you. My drinking career at that time, it didn't last very long. Maybe about 6 or 7 years. And even in that short period of time, I was a daily drinker, nightly drinker, you name it. But my ex-wife and her family and some of my employers and my friends, they all thought this wee guy had a problem with his drinking. And the only problem I had at that time was I couldn't get enough of it, and I couldn't get peace to enjoy it. And I didn't know then that that's a perfect description of the disease of alcoholism. You know, that I was trying to control and enjoy my drinking. After about 6 or 7 years, my ex-wife and her mother, they arranged for me to go and speak to this Catholic priest. And his name was Father Isaac McLaren. He's dead now, I can mention his name. And Isaac McLaren will never be dead as long as I'm alive. But I remember the first time I was sent to see this guy, and I was told that he was a long-time member of AA. And I was sitting in a big room across from him, two armchairs, and he started telling me a lot about his drinking. Then out of the blue he said to me, "Willie, do you think you may be alcoholic?" And I felt insulted. I really did. You know, I'm sitting there with the lightweight mohair suits on, the gold all over the place, you know, smoking King Edward cigars. And I'm thinking to myself, did nobody tell this guy who I am? You know? You see, the degree of denial in me at that time was so strong. I remember saying to him, you know, "Oh no, I can't be an alcoholic. I don't drink cheap wine and beer like the down and outs." That was my conception of what alcoholics were. I said to him, "You know, it's nothing but the best for me. I only drink Bell's or Grouse whiskey." And that's when he explained to me that alcohol is not a drink. It's a drug called ethanol or ethyl alcohol. And he went on to explain that it's the same drug, alcohol, that's in the cheapest wine and beer. That's what's in the most expensive whiskey. And that went in one ear and out the next. But again, the denial in me. And I remember I said to him, "You know, but I can't be an alcoholic. I've got too much money. It was my employer's money. I'd stolen it." And he said, "Well, just keep drinking, son. It won't last you long." You know? And again, I come back at him and I said, "You know, but I can't be an alcoholic. I'm far too intelligent." And he just laughed. He said, "Yeah, Willie, you're so effing intelligent. You can't count to one. If you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk." I couldn't get away from that guy quick enough that night. That was in the summer of 1970. And you know where I went as soon as I left him. I went to the nearest bar. That's where I went. You know, to hell with him. What does he know? You know? It was a year later. I remember it was, I'd finished work at 6 o'clock in the evening, crossed the road into the lounge bar, where that was my home, where all the dolly birds were with the mini skirts and the outstanding futures, and I was holding court in there. I remember coming out of there at closing time, and we all went to a party away over on the other end of Glasgow, and I remember being there. I remember coming out of that person's house about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was pouring down with rain. I remember sitting on the sidewalk with the rain running underneath my legs. I remember some of my friends round about me pleading with me not to drive the car, just to stay there that night. You know, they even tried to take my car keys off me. They had no chance. I must have started driving. And to this day, I have got no recollection of what happened next. No idea. That's 40 years ago. My first recollection was being given the last rites by a Catholic priest, a different one. My next recollection after that was a big black doctor standing over me with a clipboard asking me a load of stupid questions like, "Do you know what your name is?" And I told him. He said, "Do you know what happened to you?" And all I had to do was just look around the hospital bed that I was tied into And I said, yeah, I smashed the car up. He said, that's right, son. It's a matter of medical record. But I had over 250 stitches from there up. They didn't have laminated windscreens at that time. The windscreen shattered. And even 6 weeks after it, I was still spitting out pieces of glass from the inside of my mouth. My ribs were broken. I got the steering wheel right in the chest. My pelvis was broken. They tell me the engine ended up in my lap. My right thigh was broken in 4 places. My shin was broken in 3. And I broke every bone in my right ankle. I've now got 1 high heel. And if I didn't tell you about that, you wouldn't know. My left leg was broken, both arms were broken. My right wrist was nearly severed off. And they had to tie all the tendons together and knots under my skin. And they told me at that time that I would never walk again without a steel caliper. And that I would never straighten my right arm and use my right hand again. But you see, even at that time, my attitude all my life was, I'll show them. I'll show them. I was in that hospital in Glasgow Royal Infirmary for 4.5 months. My leg was in traction. I remember early on my ex-wife came in to see me and told me that one of my girlfriends was pregnant. And my back was really to the wall. And I would have done anything to try and keep my marriage together. If they'd asked me to do the Apache war dance in the middle of Georgia Square, I'd have said sure. But she said to me, there's a friend that lives near us, and he's a member of AA, do you mind if he comes and speaks to you? And I said, sure. And the guy came in a few days later, his name was Pat Rooney. And Pat sat with me, and he started telling me all about his drinking. I felt sorry for the poor guy. You know? And he must have been Irish, because he said the stupidest things in creation. He said, in order for me to keep what I've got, I've got to give it away. I thought, what the hell does that mean? How can you keep something you give away? It must be Irish. Anyway. And then he said, you know, well, he said, this is helping me a lot more than it's helping you. And I agreed with him. You know? That's how sick I was. To cut a long story longer, I was in the hospital for about 5.5 months. They allowed me home, still with the traction on my leg. I had to attend physiotherapy for the best part of another year to learn to walk again. During that 2-year period, you know, I was confined to barracks. I couldn't drink because she was there, and I couldn't get out, you know. And eventually I got back to work, and it was only a matter of time before I started drinking again. It was only a matter of time. And it got so bad in the evenings after I'd finished working, I'd come out the bars, and I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to go home. Because I knew as soon as I went home, the big picture was going to start. You know? What did you do? Where did you go? Who did you see? What did you... You know, the third degree. I'd had that for years. I used to come out and get 2 half bottles of whiskey and put one in that pocket and one in this pocket and try and walk 20-odd miles back to where I lived. Try to thumb a lift. That's how bad it was. I remember one Sunday afternoon, there was 2 AA members came to my house, and she had called them, and they were going to take me to my very first AA meeting. And they drove me about 25-30 miles away. And I was speaking about this last night. And the meetings at home, they all last for 2 hours. You got a chairperson, then a speaker, then the second hour, they go around the room. And I can't remember what was said in the first part of that meeting. But in the second part of the meeting, as they're going around the room, it seemed as though everybody in that room knew about me. And they were all having a go at me. And I'm sitting there and I'm racking my brain trying to think, how the hell do they know? And to show you just how clever I was, I remember sitting there and thinking, you know, they really must think my head buttons up the back. I know how this thing works. When I've left home with these 2 guys in the car, she's been on the phone to them and told them all about me. And they've got together and they've said, now, when it's your turn, you say this. When it's your turn, you say that. I don't want you to think I was paranoid. you know. That's just how bad it was. I remember at that time they suggested that I go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And to the best of my recollection, I did that. I remember that night stopping the car. I was taking my wife and my kids down to visit her parents. I remember stopping the car at a liquor store and I said to her, well, I mean, that's it. I mean, I've done the 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm cured. So I'll just go in and get a quarter bottle of whiskey, I promise you, just a quarter bottle of whiskey. And she didn't go ballistic like she normally did, because by this time she'd been going to Al-Anon. Okay? And she just said to me, well, Willie, if that's what you want to do, you carry on, son. And I didn't know that night that that quarter bottle of whiskey was the start of me going in and out the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous for the next 12 years. And during the next 12 years, I never ever got another 90 days. That's why I'm glad you're here. I never got another 90 days. The things that the people in the rooms had told me, you know, they called them the yets that they would happen to me. When I went to AA at first, I still had my wife, my kids, my home, my jobs, I had two businesses, everything was going great. But gradually over that 12-year period, I lost my wife, my kids, my home, my jobs. I became unemployed, unemployable. I lost any sense of decency, of dignity. Self-respect was out the window. I became an animal. That's what I've become. I ended up doing quite a number of one-night stands at police stations and ended up in Sauchon Prison in Edinburgh. She said I threatened to kill her. A wee guy like me. Hard to believe. It was an absolute nightmare. It's a nightmare. During that 12-year period, the only thing that I ever did right was I kept going back to AA. When I was hurting bad and badly enough, I kept going back. Because I knew that there had to be an answer, even for a lunatic like me. You know. I remember one night, after a meeting, I was speaking to a guy who was a long time away from drink. And I said to this old guy, and I was crying, and I was pleading with him. And I remember saying to him, you know, I know this is a program of change, but how do I change? And he patted me on the back and he said, Willie, just keep coming back, son. You'll change in spite of yourself. You know, he was right. I got worse.